You're listening to a special showcase episode of the Roundtable Podcast. 20 minutes with Seth Harwood. Hello, literary alchemists. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to a special edition of the Roundtable Podcast, 20 Minutes With.
20 Minutes With is a episode in which Dave and I have the great honor to share the microphone with some amazing people, and today we have sort of we're going in a little bit of a different direction, and I think it's going to be awesome.
A little bit of, I would say we are blazing a new trail of epic awesomeness, but yeah, a little bit of a different direction is good too. So Brian, check this out. Our guest host for 20 Minutes With received his MFA in fiction at the Iowa Writers Workshop, all right? Goes out, writes a fabulous epic noir novel, Jack Wakes Up, introducing the character of Jack Palms, and garnered a horde of ravenous fans by producing it and releasing it as a free audiobook online, which he has done, by the way, with all of his books. And really established his credentials as a writer of some seriously hard-hitting badassery. The gritty saga of his prime character, Jack Palms, continues in This Is Life and Checkmate, both available in ebook and audio and the Dead Tree variety of text. But his stories don't end with just the awesome Jack Palms series. He's explored a wide range of other stories and characters. Young Junius, a short story collection titled A Long Way from Disney. And he's recently, currently serializing in audio form, In Broad Daylight, the tale of Jess Harden, FBI agent on the trail of a serial killer. Now, all of this awesomeness is available at his website, which we will give later, because if I say it now, it'll give away the name, and we can't do that because we're still building the drama. He teaches at Stanford and the City College of San Francisco. He has presented several times at the Association of Writers and Writing Programs Conference, where I'm told no one has ever died, which is just sterling, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up. Because for this issue of 20 Minutes With, we bring to the Skype line and to the round table, Mr. Seth Harwood. Seth, thank you so much, man, for making the time and joining us on the round table.
Wow, that was a great introduction. I feel like the crowd is like,
I know.
We need to drop in an audio of that.
I do. I need to get a big crowd, you know, like Shea Stadium or whatever.
Definitely. So. thank you so much for having me. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well, and this really is a departure for us, Seth, and it's very cool because you are, well, and let's get into the 20 Minutes With, because I've got questions, Brian's got questions.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna hit the timer and let's go ahead and roll into this. And my first question for you, Seth, is how do you classify yourself? Are you a noir author? Are you pulp fiction? Are you thriller? I mean, there are elements of all of that stuff in your work. How do you see yourself?
Yeah, I really see myself as a crime fiction author.
I've written
some literary short stories, but yeah, crime fiction is the way that I describe it.
Okay, because the Jack Palms series is definitely, it's got that kind of noir pulp feel to it.
I feel like crime is sort of the umbrella, and underneath crime are like hard-boiled and noir, and pulp as well. Yeah.
But
and it's podcasting to me is like the ultimate new technology pulp. I mean, they used to do these stories in pulp magazines because it was cheap, and now with these MP3s, you know, nothing's cheaper to get it out there.
Exactly. Now we had one of our Twitter kin out there had a question, and I thought it was a good one. So let me pose it to you. Professor Brain Fever, bless his heart, also known as Christopher Morse, asks, how do you capture the gritty black and white feel of noir in print? See, even he thinks you're a noir author, but how do you gritty up and get that hard-hitting, harsh kind of light that you shine on your stories? Can you talk about that?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. It's really interesting. You know, people in the genre and who are huge fans of noir and hard-boiled can argue forever about what the differences are between noir and hard-boiled. When I hear noir, I think about movies like
Maltese Falcon,
The Killers, mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
Right.
And I wonder, you know, can you get that stuff into print? I think that on some level, what we have to do as writers is make it new more than sort of try to capture those things. I mean, I definitely picture my stuff in color, so it's hard to kind of get those noir tones. But if you look at a movie like Pulp Fiction or The Departed or something like The Sopranos or Dexter or The Wire, like that still carries the same vibe to me, but without sort of the visual noir elements of the shadows and the horizontal black lines and stuff like that.
Sure, sure.
You know, I think really you just want to bring in the action and the suspense and some of that world perhaps, but not necessarily the lighting. You know, the world of the underbelly, so to speak, of society, the people who are kind of on that edge.
And that really is the defining element of that noir context. And of course, that's going to bring in crime, so it's a valid subgenre. One thing I noticed about your work, Seth, is that you draw attention to minute details in every scene, but not every detail. You seem to have a very specific agenda in not only what you point out, but how you point it out. Is that a conscious voice that you're cultivating, or does that just come naturally?
Well, from a craft standpoint, that's what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from a craft standpoint, you know, I teach creative writing classes, and one of the things that I talk to my students a lot about is the relationship between writer and reader. And typically in workshop drafts, you have a situation where either the writer is trying to do too much describing and sort of goes to the Henry James end, or he's not doing enough and the reader gets confused and everybody in the room has a different take on where the characters are standing, or there's just no physical body. So one of the things that I really endeavor to do is create a visual picture or a visual movie. I try to in my readers as they're reading my stuff. And so I think, you know, through workshop and through training with other writers and talking a lot to readers in workshop settings, I feel like I've been able to kind of get a sense about where the sweet spot is between how much work the writer is doing and how much work we want the reader to do in creating those images in his or her head. I think it's important for a writer to think about allowing your reader to do some of that creation of those images. I mean, if my writing is really working, the readers are seeing a movie of the characters in their mind, but I can't try to describe that fully, and the readers are going to fill in some of that on their own. And to allow for that, I need to leave some space in there. And that really allows the readers to make it their own and enjoy it more.
That is pure gold. That is beautiful, beautiful advice. And speaking purely for myself, and probably for Brian too, you're being successful, dude. You are totally pulling it off.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Yeah. I think it's something that really takes a while to kind of find it. I mean, it's like, you know, in drafts, you're either too low or too high, and you sort of get the hang of it after a while. But it comes from, I think, showing a lot of your work to readers and hearing their feedback.
I was going to say, do you use beta readers?
No, this is when I was in grad school and I was going to workshops.
Okay.
I mean, I think now I have a better sense about where that sweet spot is, and so I'm not doing as much tweaking on that level, but I think it's something that you can actually sort of learn and then keep permanently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Looking at Jack Wakes Up, one of the things that I noticed, and I think that readers have a tendency to not spend a lot of time really considering the work that goes into the craft. And this seems like such a simple thing, but I do think it's really important, and that's tense. And you're writing in a present tense, which has a tendency to create more suspense and to, you know, leave even the narrator not revealing or sometimes not even knowing what's going to happen just after the immediate moment. How important do you think it is to begin with the right tense, and how do you choose which way to go?
Well, I think the bigger issue for writers is really making sure to choose the right narrative strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just to change the question a little bit, but I think it's a great question. Yeah, I mean, so in that book, I have third person close on Jack, and that really worked well for me there. The present tense thing, you know, at that point, I was really coming out of a strong short story writing background.
Right.
And working in that realm, I really felt like it was okay to use either present tense or past tense. Now, having learned more about the novel and how people react to the novel, I know that there's a lot of baggage that comes to people when they assume a lot of things when they're reading a novel in present tense.
Yeah.
But coming from a short story standpoint, you know, I really like the present tense because it feels like verbally it moves faster. You're hitting up on a lot of S sounds that kind of flow one to another instead of a lot of sort of punctuation like D sounds with the past tense.
Right.
And so
I hadn't even considered that. Holy crap.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, that goes back to even before I was podcasting. I think about my stuff verbally and auditorily a lot as I'm writing. I try to think about the sounds of the language and sort of, you know, in working on those short stories in the workshop, we talked a lot about sort of the sound of the words and how present tense gives your story a different kind of sound. And I thought that that sound and that movement really went with the Jack Palm story, really went with you know, the vibe of it, the action of it, the genre. And then when I did Young Junius, which is sort of a flashback to 1987 for one of the minor characters, kind of his origin story, I used the past tense there. And, you know, to be honest with you, I was surprised that people responded as strongly as they did to the present tense. I thought that, you know, it's fine to go either way. And now I realize really the huge majority of novels are written in past tense.
Yeah. Yeah, right, yeah, yeah. When Hunger Games came out and was written in present tense, it got a huge hue and cry from a lot of the diehards, the purists, that just said, "Oh God, I can't deal with that." That's a bold choice. That's a very bold
the other
choice.
Way that I look at it is that, you know, now that we've come through postmodernism and we've kind of broken the third wall or whatever you want to call it, you know, we know that this isn't. There, you know, the artifice of this being a true story is gone. This is a creation. It's something that's being created for your enjoyment as a reader. And, you know, I don't need to convince you that this happened in San Francisco with these characters at a past time. You know, I just want you to go along with the story and enjoy it.
Sure. We'll be back with more of our conversation with Seth Harwood after this brief promotional break.
My name is Justin McCumber. I'm the creator and one of the co-hosts for the Dead Robots Society podcast. Every week we discuss a variety of topics that are fundamental to the craft of writing, from the differences between tone and theme, to world building, to how to create compelling antagonists. Along with the roundtable discussions, we've also had the pleasure of interviewing published authors, television writers, podcast luminaries, publishing house founders, and magazine editors. We're dedicated to our listeners, and we work hard to pack our episodes with as much quality education and entertainment as possible. We never stop encouraging ourselves and our listeners to always be writing and to always be improving. The promised land of publication is our goal, and we know that together we can achieve it. If we can also have a good laugh along the way, all the better. You can find us online at www.deadrobotssociety.com. At our website, you'll find show notes, links to our personal sites, our email address, and direct download links to our episodes. You'll also find a link to our forums, where we've created a private critique group so that you can safely post your work and get comments and suggestions from us as well as our listeners. All we ask is that you participate by critiquing in return. So come to our site, subscribe to our show, and join us. You can also find us at iTunes. Just search for Dead Robots and we'll be there. After that, get writing. We are.
Now, let's get back to the conversation with Seth Harwood. Readers are much more willing, I think, to surrender to a writer that proves themselves as someone worthy of that trust. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the trust comes in a lot, going back to your first question, with really sort of hitting the right level of description and really trying to get to that movie image in the reader's mind.
Sure, right. Sure.
And not undercutting your readers, making sure that you're not underestimating them, that they can fill in the blanks.
Absolutely. And it's also really critical to give them the room to fill in the blanks with, you know, images from their own lives. I mean, if I try to describe for you exactly what the house looks like, maybe you get it, but if I leave enough room for you to put in scenes from houses from your own life, it makes it much more rich for you and gives you a sense of emotion as well, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Seth, you were talking earlier about how the importance of bringing something new to whatever subgenre you're working in, and we certainly agree with that. And I'm curious, what do you feel that you're bringing that expands or deepens the crime fiction genre in general, and whatever subgenre you're splashing in at the moment, and how do you foster that in your stories as you develop them?
Well, I think in the history of crime fiction, if you start out with guys like Hammett and Chandler,
sure,
they really were influenced by other writers strictly. And then from that came the noir film revolution with, you know, the movies from their books, movies of the books of guys like James M. Cain and folks like that. And then if you look at the sort of later generations of writers in crime, those guys were not only influenced by the people that they had read, but they were also influenced by the noir movies. So like your friend is asking on Twitter, you know, some of that stuff, those noir elements come into the writing and sort of subconsciously, as we reference our influences in writing, they come onto the page, whether we're thinking about how we want that to happen or not. So if you go sort of beyond that, maybe into the 1950s or 1960s, you're looking at writing that's been influenced by these movies and the writing of other guys. So then if I'm reading those guys from the 60s, they've been influenced by movies and books. And now for me, I really get excited about some of these wonderful serialized, not episodic, but sort of long form TV series that we're able to have on some of the cable networks now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like The Wire or
The Shield.
The Shield, Breaking Bad, The Sopranos, Dexter. You know, these right. are really things that I love to watch. And so even blending into the podcasting of my stuff, if I'm thinking about how to create it, that serialized aspect of those shows helps me lead into the podcasting of it. But I also really appreciate what I see in those shows in terms of how they develop their characters. And so, you know, reading as much crime fiction as I can, I really try to blend the influences between the stuff that I'm reading and the stuff that I see on TV now and in movies. Even things like video games. I mean, there's just so much out there that we bring to whatever we're creating because it's a part of our life and our world.
Sure. And the cool thing is that
to my work.
Yeah. 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 And the thing that always strikes me is that we're all, you know, whatever fan of genre you're a fan of, we're all consuming that, the same materials, those hits, those TV shows, those movies, those books, but each individual twigs on a different aspect, on a different quality, right. on a different continuum of that media. And so when they do decide to put pen to paper, even though we're all influenced by largely the same stuff, that unique vision is portrayed by each individual writer crafting what it is that they enjoy or that they twig on. So
right, exactly. I mean, you know, as a writer who reads, I mean, maybe we all read the same 100 books, but, you know, every writer has the books that really hit him or her and stick in their head and sort of get hardwired into their brain in a certain way.
Yeah.
And those are the influences that you really continue to draw from. But, you know, as we all read the same books, we're going to have different books that really strike us and become hardwired like that. Or if we're all watching the same TV shows, different aspects of them will get hardwired into our brain.
Sure, sure, sure.
Another thing that we've talked about before on the show has to do with when you're starting out a story, starting out with a broken character, starting out with a character that's really been beaten down. And it seems like you do that with Jack, and he's had some success as an actor, and then here he's had some hard times. He's gotten sort of out of that, crawled out of it a little bit, but is still, he starts off sort of broken. And so when you're writing, do you make that choice consciously, or is it sort of just a stylized thing that comes?
No, I made that choice very consciously. I think that that's one of the really interesting moments in people's lives. One of the things that we miss in some of the TV shows that aren't that good are sort of the aftermath of situations that are real. I mean, you know, these 90-minute movies that we see that are summer blockbusters, it's all the action and the fighting, but we see right. none of the aftermath. And the aftermath is where a lot of the real emotion and kind of life and humanity comes in.
That's a good point.
And so, you know, thinking about Jack Palms and Jack Wakes Up, you know, he's been in a place where he has gone through some really hard stuff. He was addicted to drugs. He was kind of strung out and had this bad situation with his wife. And it seems like when you're in a really bad place like that, you kind of realize at a certain point what it is that you need to do. You realize how to kind of play it clean and take care of yourself. And for Jack, it was going to the gym and stuff. But it seems to me like the really interesting part of life is when you get to the point where you're come out of that and there's room for you to kind of have fun again and sort of start to incorporate the things that we see as part of normal life or successful life.
Right.
And so that's where the decisions get much more difficult, I think. So I wanted to work on that part of Jack's life because that's really, you know, that's where the decisions get harder. And, you know, for those who've read the book, obviously Jack doesn't do the best job of making decisions, but I think the ones that he makes are interesting.
Do you think that some of that comes from your experience with literary fiction? In looking at those aspects
of literary fiction and with life.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure, if you're I read a lot of short stories, basically exclusively short stories for 6 or 7 years. And, you know, a lot of the literary short stories are really dealing with the aftermath. You know, it's not about how the kid gets killed. It's about how his parents deal with that over the next week or over the next 48 hours.
Right.
And those are really kind of the heartbreaking scenes of real humanity. That I really think are amazing to get onto the page. So in some ways, you know, even though a lot of this stuff that I'm writing has a lot of action in it, I try to keep some of the humanity there, or at least I did with Jack Wakes Up.
Definitely.
Absolutely. So, Seth, you've explored a variety of literary forms, novel and short story. You've explored different characters from the gritty to the FBI and every spectrum in between. What are you working on now in your craft in terms of what you're trying to improve in your own ability to tell a tale? And could you share with our audience what it is that you're doing to hone that aspect of your creative process?
These are great questions, by the way. All the
Thanks,
ones
man.
You're asking are really getting me to think. You guys are making me sound smart here. I love it.
It's our job, Seth. It's what we do, man.
So right now, I've been working on a novel that sort of pushes the boundaries of what I know about religion and certain situations in San Francisco. But most recently, what I've been doing is trying out a new form and working on converting something that I've been writing as a novel into a screenplay or sort of a teleplay for television.
Very cool.
I use Scrivener, a program, and that's really helping me with the formatting of it. But yeah, I've been reading some screenplays and teleplays and really trying to get my head around what the differences are beyond the formatting, how to use the formatting. And right now, that's been my big experiment, is to try out this whole alternate way of writing and see what I can learn from that. And already one of the things that I'm learning is a lot of different things regarding plotting and just looking at this novel from a very different, almost sort of an outline stance while I do this.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at the time and we've run out, sadly. Seth, dude, thank you so much for making the time and sharing such wonderful insights. I think there's a lot of gold here that our listeners can take and apply to their own work. So we really appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I hope that your listeners enjoyed the discussion.
I have no doubt that they will. And dear friends, if you did, feel free to show us some love out at the iTunes site where a review is always welcome. If you had some comments for Seth or for us, when this podcast goes up, if you're listening to it, of course, it's already gone up. Duh. You can just go down to that comment section and leave some words. Or, you know, Seth is always accessible out there at sethharwood.com, where all the awesomeness that he has created is available in Dead Tree and audio format. So definitely check that out. You know, or just drop us a line. thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Those of you that have reached out, we so appreciate it. Those of you that haven't, what are you waiting for? We're nice guys.
Right. We don't get paid for this, but getting a comment or, you know, getting a review, it's like dropping $10 in our pocket. So
yeah,
it's hugely appreciated.
There you go. A comment is worth $10. That's
more. Yeah.
That's awesome. Brian, any closing comments, observations or thoughts as we wrap this up, man?
Seth, I'm really glad that you came on today, because I just started listening to Jack Wakes Up, and I'm getting really into it, and so it's kind of cool to have you on and be able to talk to you, and then to everybody else, stop listening and go write.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or go listen to Jack Wakes Up.
There you go.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah, and yeah, definitely. Seth, thank you for popping our gender cherry, as it were.
Genre cherry,
yes, because we've been all wrapped up in the spec fic and the fantasy and the sci-fi, and you mark a turning point, a crossroads in the career of this podcast, and it's been a delight. And based on this, Brian, I want to do more of this. This is fabulous.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, but for now, friends, stay tuned. In a couple of days, we'll have Seth back. He's going to help us workshop a spec fic tale by a friendly podcasting voice that some of you may know. Until then, stay cool, stay frosty, find what you're looking for, and we'll talk to you soon. You guys take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com, or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is @writerspodcast, or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.